Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, in was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said Apfelstrudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat episode 437. I'm your host, Zach Ryan. This is IGN's Nintendo Show every Thursday at 3 p.m. at nvc.ign.com and Fridays on YouTube. This week I'm joined by Per Schneider.
Good day, my friend.
Good day to you, sir. Brian Altano.
Hello.
And down there on the end, Alex Osborne in his first question mark NVC appearance. Alex, why don't you tell us what you do here at IGN?
I'm the homepage editor, so when you see things positioned on the site, stuff up at the top, and the little blocks on the bottom, I decide where that goes.
It's a very, very important gig, and I will say that you're doing a bang-up job. You've been doing it now for what, six months? Yeah, since about E3, right?
If not even earlier.
Yeah. Alex, you'll recognize Alex's name because you've written for the site for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're a fellow Nintendo nerd. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite Nintendo game and or franchise?
Zelda. Majora's Mask, specifically.
Okay. Oh, that's a good one.
You're also a Pokemon guy, right?
Also a Pokemon guy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you're also an anime guy, aren't you?
An anime guy.
Okay, there we go.
Right. Yeah. Well, those are the three.
This year, or this episode, we're not going to be talking about any anime, but we'll probably talk about those other two. We're going to do a whole year in review for you this year. There's a lot of stuff to get through, but I did want to share an anecdote that I just heard about Per Schneider.
Huh?
Friend of the show, Justin Davis, who's a regular on GameScoop, was telling me that he has a one-on-one, a weekly standing one-on-one with Pear as his manager, where you guys talk about, like, what, you know, Justin's job, et cetera. And Justin said that Pear ended that by telling him, hey, I'm sorry to cut this short, but I have to go to another meeting. I got to get out of here. I have a hard out. And he split. And then Justin said he walked past a room where Pear was just sitting in the room eating cookies.
What?
Yeah.
No.
True or false?
That was false. I had a meeting with my...
Do you book a weekly personal cookie meeting?
Is that like a German thing? Is a cookie meeting like a German thing?
The people I had to have the budget meeting with were in that room judging some cookie competition or something. So I had to grab them.
A likely story.
What's it like to look to your friends directly in the face and lie?
Guys.
Those cookies were delicious.
We have an action-packed show. We have a ton of games to get through in 2018 for Nintendo. But I did want to start with a quick recap of what we're playing this week. Me personally, I'm only playing Smash. I've been playing Smash like it's going out of business. The only thing that I'll say that I have to add to last week's discussion about Smash is, man, that online is wrecked. It is such a bummer to try and play online. I mean, you're talking like single-digit frames per second in some cases. And for someone like me who's trying to get better at the game, it is nigh on impossible to try and improve. But when you're playing that slowly,
you're not enjoying the slow-mo mode.
No, it's terrible because like you're slashing your sword at people and then they've already moved and there's no hit detection. And like,
I think
it baffles me, but that there's not dedicated servers for this game. And it's crazy to me that Nintendo is not fixing this.
Welcome to the beta, because there wasn't one. There was no public beta for a game that has a huge audience playing.
Yeah. Well, what sucks is
no
that
test fire.
We've kind of come to expect this with a lot of Nintendo stuff at this point, but the major difference is this is one of the first tentpole games to come after the fact that they started charging for online.
Yeah.
So you're paying for access to that slideshow currently.
Yeah. It's funny to think like earlier this year, we were thinking they were going to launch Switch Online with Smash, like that being the big thing and making that big push. And it's like,
This game came in hot, I tell you. I mean, otherwise, they've done test fires for all their big online games, and they didn't do it for this one.
That's a good point. Right? That's a really good point.
They came in hot, and this is now the beta, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for paying for the game. Luckily, there's a lot more to be had in that game, including 4-player and 8-player local, but it's a bummer. It's sad they couldn't get this right.
As a dude that none of my roommates play Smash, and it's hard to get a competitive Smash round going here at the office right now because everybody's wrapping up the end of the year stuff. I'm just looking to play against people, and online seems to be my best option, but it's unfun. I tried for an hour last night.
We'll play with you.
Thank you.
Come in. Bring your Switch. We'll play it. You can take it anywhere.
Bring it to that cookie meeting.
Yeah, bring it to my cookie meeting.
The German cookie meeting?
I have a secret cookie meeting every week.
Don't shine. Yes. Brian, tell us about Battle Princess Madeline.
Battle Princess Madeline is finally out now on Switch, I believe, this week. I actually got...
What? Is this like the John Wick of 16-bit platformers?
A little bit. No, this is effectively spiritual successor to something like Ghosts and Goblins, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, whatever combinations of ghouls and ghosts.
And goblins
that you can put together.
Okay.
Which was old Capcom games, sort of action platformers about fighting evil nightmare monsters. This one was a Kickstarter darling for a while. It's finally out now. I like it. I do not love it.
Okay.
It's got a lot going for it, but I think it's a little too old school for me. It's got two modes. One's like a story-driven mode, which is cool. It lets you kind of meander around the world a little bit and upgrade stuff with a shop and like kind of mild RPG elements. And there's an arcade mode, which is straight up 16-bit Ghouls and Ghosts, Ghosts and Goblins. It's really gorgeous. The sprite work is fantastic. The music's really good. The animation's awesome. It just feels a little too old school for me. I think it's a little bit unforgiving, but that's kind of what you go in expecting with a Ghouls and Ghosts style game. Mm-hmm. So maybe you'll enjoy it.
So I was going to get it just because it looks like that era of Capcom games. Yeah. It looks like Mickey Mouse or Demon Crest or, you know, like any of the, like even Aladdin, like the kind of like rounded look of the old Capcom 16-bit games. Yep. And so when I saw it running, I'm like, I'm going to play this.
I wish
you'd love it.
Yeah. I mean,
I wish you'd love it.
It's like in the 7-ish territory right now, which is still good.
That's still good
in our scale.
That's still good.
Yeah. It just sounds like it's missing some of maybe the quality of life improvements
over
the years.
Mm-hmm. The sprite work is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
That sort of frantic trailer that we just saw, if you're watching the video version, was pretty impressive just from a sprite work perspective. But I'm not a fan of Ghouls and Ghosts or Ghosts and Goblins or Goblins and Ghouls or any of those games, any permutation of those two monsters. But this game does look worth checking out. Right on. Pear, you wanted to talk about the Atari Flashback Classics.
Yeah, I'm playing a bunch of stuff. I'm playing a lot more Sundered. I'm playing this Mars survival game called JCB Pioneer Mars, which I'm actually digging. It's like a slow-paced game. But this one, I've been spending the most time in. It's 150 Atari classics ranging from the arcade games to 2600, 5200. So, you know, the era of video games that I grew up with when I was a kid, a young lad. Now 150 games in Atari terms means, in this case, I counted, it's actually 125 unique games because you'll get Missile Command as an arcade version, Missile Command as a 2600 version.
Okay.
Right? Cause you're getting our, you're getting some of the duplicates and multiple centipedes. It's always comical to play the arcade version and then, switch to the 2600 version and see how like in hindsight how horrible they translated it to this limited machine, but also how creative they had to be with pulling this off.
I started playing this too. I mean, obviously, the quality of the games is up for debate, and a lot of these sort of predated my gaming history. But what's the sort of quality of life in terms of like? Like, can you like do save states and all that fun stuff? Like,
all of that stuff is built in. It's a really nice and smart collection with good emulation. You can do Tate mode. You can do vertical for the arcade games that were in the vertical format.
I saw Jeremy Parrish tweeting about that. There's like eight games that work in
this.
This is
like the perfect test case for his Tate controller. Yeah, the flip grip.
So most of the games are 2600, 5200. And so, you know, they don't have the Atari computers, which I absolutely love that era of C64 Atari, 400, 800, 600, whatever, afterwards. But the big games on here that are important are like, there's Asteroids on here, there's Tempest on it, you know, you've got Centipede, Missile Command, Breakout, the 2600 version, Crystal Castles. And then if you're really into Ready Player One, you can finally play Adventure. Right? Nice. So you can find the first Easter egg ever created in video games, so Warren Robinet name hidden in the walls.
Also, if you're really into Ready Player One, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I'll add, too, that in the last week and a half, the Sega Genesis Classics Collection launched. So we effectively kind of have a virtual console now because there was 50 games in that thing. There's 150 here. So there's classic games on Switch. It's just they're just not all in one spot.
The only bummer with all of these classic collections, and you saw this with the PlayStation Classic, where we're not getting the true classics of the PlayStation, like Gran Turismo, because of the freaking car licenses, right? Or the wrestling games no longer have WCW and all of that.
Isn't there an Atari Donkey Kong game that's not on there either?
So you're not getting the really bad Atari 2600 Donkey Kong game, which would be great. Just it would be fun to play because it's so bad.
From a preservation perspective, I totally understand that.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. Remember the movie games? E.T., the worst game ever created, so-called. Whatever.
As a kid,
that's all not on here.
As a kid whose sweet spot lies basically in the SNES, like that's the first generation that I was really into. These games have zero appeal for me, and I know it makes me sound like such a turd to say that, but
no,
like, I've tried so many times to get into these retro collections, and it's few and far between the games that really grip me. Like Tempest, I really love. Crystal Castles, I like a lot.
Yars Revenge.
I've never played Yars Revenge. I don't think, but this kind of collection to me is interesting from a preservation perspective, but like ultimately wasted on me as somebody that like those games are just not inherently fun.
I'm in the same boat. I don't have nostalgia for them, and they were just before my time, and so when I try to connect with them, it never happens.
Right.
And I've tried
so many times. I know, like, as a fan of the genre, like, I feel like I should will myself to play these and be like, oh, now I understand why these are so great, but every time I've given it a shot, it's like, oh. Well,
I think it'd be easier if they had, like, the title games, like, you know, Space Invaders or Pac-Man, like, even the 2600 versions
of
those.
Oh, yeah, there's no Space Invaders.
That's because it's all, you know, that's the licensing challenge. But what you are getting, you're getting kind of, like, anybody who grew up with these games, it's a nice, you know, dose of nostalgia to replay these and go like, oh my God, I can't believe how far we've come.
Well, speaking of how far we've come, let's talk about the year that was. 2018 for Nintendo. Now, this is a Nintendo podcast. You guys know that?
I've heard.
We're going to talk a little bit about the year overall. I want to talk a little bit about Nintendo's triumphs and follies. And I want to talk at the end. I'd like each of us to kind of reflect and give a score on the IGN scale of what we would give award Nintendo for this year.
4 stars.
Well, that's not how the scale works. What is it? 5.5 Mario hats.
Wait, are we? Is this? Are we? awarding Nintendo or just the Switch or
so
just
the overall I like to think about it as the overall package. Like think about the games,
year.
The delays, the stuff that worked for us, the stuff that didn't work for us. I have a metric here that I'll get to at the end that sort of averages a lot of the big game scores, which will give you a hint of where the bigger game scores sort of lie. But overall, I'd like to talk a little bit about, because we didn't score things like Nintendo Switch's online service.
Right.
Or you can't put a score to like...
Four Mario hats.
Okay, thank you.
Three out of 400 NES games.
But first, let us take a look back at the year that was, 2017. One of the most successful years in Nintendo's history. I don't think anybody here on this panel is going to argue that 2017 didn't just rock our socks as the NBC cast.
There was no Wii Sports, but...
Well, I mean... I mean, you're probably right. Mm-hmm. First party games, obviously just bangers. Zelda, Mario Kart, Splatoon 2, Super Mario Odyssey. 15 million units sold from March 3rd, the launch date, to January 31st, 2018,
yep.
Which is crazy because that means that in less than its first year, it outsold the Wii U in its total lifetime, which is absolutely nuts.
That's
so
great.
Out of the gate, a wild success for Nintendo.
God.
And then my last stat here is that Switch is also now the fastest-selling current-gen console. Now, through the 21 months that it's been released, and 8.7 million units sold in the U.S. Mm-hmm. since launch.
The interesting note about that is last year, at the end of the year, and reported in January, in the U.S., Switch was the fastest-selling in the history of all consoles.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've updated it to say it's the fastest-selling current-gen.
Mm-hmm.
So Wii was the one that was the lead before. So I think since it had a slower year this year, they had to sort of narrow
the goalpost a little bit.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think most importantly, it brought Nintendo back into the cultural zeitgeist, into the conversation again. It revitalized their – not saying their handheld brand was dying or anything, mm-hmm. but it gave people simultaneously a reason to talk about Nintendo handhelds and consoles at the same time. It brought Zelda back in a great new way. It brought mm-hmm. Mario back in a great new way. It was a fantastic year for the company.
Yeah, and it really was such a throwback because it was easier to make these games way back when in the Super NES age, right? Like, it wasn't that uncommon to have, three big Nintendo-owned franchises in the same year, but it's become rarer, but more rare nowadays to have Mario and Zelda released mm-hmm. in the same year.
Like, and don't forget... Arms.
Yeah, and Arms was there. Don't tease Mr. You love that game. What's going on here?
Arms.
More like butts. Okay. Starting off this year, 2018.
I play that too.
January. Yeah, I would as well. January started with a real banger. Celeste released for Nintendo Switch. Not only on Nintendo Switch, but it came out for all consoles. But it was an interesting and indicative sort of look at 2018 to come in that we'd have a lot of really great indie games. We gave Celeste a 10 out of 10. Tom Marks, you know the guy with the bow tie, you know
yep,
Tom?
Yep.
He said that this is the greatest triumph of Celeste is that it's the best in class in jumping and dashing. It's blended beautifully with an important and sincere story and an incredible soundtrack. Who wants to talk a little bit about Celeste? Alex, you want to talk about Celeste?
Yeah. The feel of this game is just incredible. The platforming is just so much fun to play. It just feels... great. A platformer, everything's about the feel, I think.
Yeah.
And the art style. I love a simplified art style. It really nails that. Very colorful and bright. And the music, it knows its scope, and I think it just delivers on like what it wants to do really well. And the story, too, kind of dealing with anxiety and sort of not being too on the nose, but like on the nose enough, I guess.
Yeah.
Everyone can get it.
Really good. The funny writing, too.
Yeah. The way that that story unfolds is really interesting,
yeah.
I think, as well. Sort of punishing difficulty married with this like very sincere story.
Thumbs
up for me.
Really great accessibility options for people that don't want to deal with the like
absolutely.
Crushing difficulty of it all mm-hmm. and still want to get through the game and feel accomplished.
I'm not gonna lie, I played that last level on Babby mode.
Me too. Put a little Babby mode on there.
Yeah.
You gotta do it.
Didn't have the patience for it.
I don't care.
February saw Bayonetta number 1 and 2 coming to the Switch, which is also sort of indicative of things that we'd see bigger titles on the Switch this year. That's re-releases of games that were sort of overlooked or didn't really find a place in the market on the Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our review was redacted, but right now it's riding at a 90% on Metacritic.
We gave it Garouk out of 10.
Yeah, this is a pretty great little bundle here, the two of them. And what more can you say about Bayonetta? It's just like one of the coolest action platformers, or not even platformers, but like one of the coolest stylistic action games that you could possibly play.
I remember seeing something along the lines of this game outsold the Wii U version in its like first week. like sales to date, which is huge. Obviously this was, a kind of quiet time at the beginning of the year where people were sort of being like, hey, what's next for Nintendo? And this was it for a little while. So plus lots of indies, of course.
Yeah. And this is following the announcement of Bayonetta 3, which will eventually come to Switch.
Yes.
So a nice little, welcome, present for people that maybe missed the first few Bayonetta games on Wii U before you get into what will undoubtedly be one of the biggest Switch titles.
Great to have it back. The Bayonetta games always remind me of like games that I loved on the Dreamcast. You know, this game does not feel like a Nintendo title.
Platinum in general feels like a developer that would have had a home on the Dreamcast. Totally. Yeah, I agree. And then finally, we get into March, which is Nintendo's first party offering, and that is Kirby Star Allies, which is a game that I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much time you guys spent with Kirby.
I spent some time playing four player.
Okay.
But my feeling was that it was a step down from the Kirby game that came before it.
Robobot?
This game was almost too easy. Like, especially with four players, it was, it just felt like the game was playing itself sometimes.
Yeah.
But I did, I thought it was cute. It was fun. And I think it'd be good for parents with younger kids. I don't mean that in a mean way. It's a very simple game that way.
I thought that the four player mechanic or the four players controlled by one player mechanic or whatever it is was sort of like needlessly overcomplicated while still being incredibly easy. I just didn't really connect with that gimmick. And so I didn't get a ton of mileage out of this game, which I really wanted to because it's really gorgeous and it's fun, but just dragging those four players around by myself all the time felt stupid.
Brendan Graber reviewed it for us. He gave it an 8.3 and he says, Kirby Star Allies brings frantic four player fun. That's a continual blast. And thanks to countless ally combinations. One of the things that I really, really like about, Kirby and to a lesser extent the Yoshi games is that their difficulty is scalable, right? And that's one of the things that, this game does really well that Yoshi's Woolly World did really well before it in that, you can get through the main campaign and ignore the collectibles and it's a cakewalk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But some of those later challenges, some of the later levels and some of the hidden stuff in order to get to that, it's some real like genuine puzzlers happening there. And just a little puzzler, but that's like one of the things that I really love about this game in particular. And I agree with you. I like Robobot better. I think it's
same,
a little more clever and a little more challenging, but this game was really great. And it was nice to see, a sort of second tier Nintendo character make an appearance this early on in the year. So that was cool. Alex, did you get a chance to play it?
I played a little bit of it. I gravitated more towards the Kirby games. I played a bit more with the art style, like Epic Yarn and even like sort of the clay aesthetic where I feel like Kirby in general is a bit more of like a, not like a super detailed character. And I like it when they sort of use it as a way to play with the art style.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Nintendo's kind of shifted that over to Yoshi now. I don't know if we'll see sort of them go back to a unique art style with Kirby in the future.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I guess this was just sort of
Kirby art.
Kirby. It didn't have a gimmick in the way that, Yoshi had Woolly World or this cardboard look that he's got for Crafted World. Yeah. So that's interesting.
Speaking of cardboard.
Yes. Excellent segue. Per, I would like for you to talk about Nintendo Labo. This was, April of this year.
Mm-hmm.
We gave Nintendo Labo a 7.6. And our review says the real appeal of the cardboard toys in the Nintendo Labo variety kit is in its potential to bring out the creative side you didn't know you had.
Yeah.
Talk to us about Labo.
This was a re-review.
Correct.
And, I don't think we re-reviewed, both of them, but I really enjoyed these kits when we're, the creative process of building it and especially building it with others. In this case, my family, we really liked working together. Sometimes construction projects can be menial when you're creating all the keys for the keyboard. It's a lot of work, and having like friends along or family along to do that. It was a really cool experience. And then it became like just about playing with these things and figuring out how Nintendo pulled this off. And that's the most impressive part. Like the actual gameplay, isn't there, right? There's not longevity there, even with the steering wheel that came up much later. It's just these small little mini games. But when you pop the hood on these things and you realize how they pulled off complicated mechanical functions with little sticky tape and reflective stickers and stuff, it's just really impressive. I really love this project.
The actual engineering behind it to me is sort of baffling. I think the software is mostly boring from what I've played. It's mini games. It's simple mini games. But I really love the way that they they did the reveal, something mm-hmm. totally just wholly unique for Nintendo. And, you know, they kind of tease that. Oh, we've got something coming tomorrow that's like no one is expecting.
Comes out 4/20.
Yeah. And,
yeah. It was the release date.
Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. And I didn't spend a ton of time with Labo this year. I helped build a couple of kits, but, and I played some of the demos as they were kind of making their way around the office. But I think, Brian, you spent more time building these kits than any of us.
I had a blast building these kits. And I think, Perry, you kind of nailed it. I've built stuff like the Lego Millennium Falcon, which effectively has like, yeah, it's got a bunch of that. You built a huge one too.
Yeah.
You're doing the same build like 15 times in mm-hmm. a row and it gets a little tedious. But with Labo, there's funny writing that accompanies it because your instructions are on screen and there's animations and they're like, hey, if you want to take a break and like, oh, this is the best key. Like when you're building the piano, like weird stuff like that. So, they're really fun. I don't think there's a lot of longevity with the software. I think the real joy was making them.
I was really impressed at the UI design and the instructions and how they do it. Like, I wish Nintendo ran IKEA, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it gets so confounding when you sometimes see these drawings for building a complex, like, wardrobe or something. And these guys did it so well. And it was a joy for me.
It just speaks to Nintendo's strength as, like, a toy maker.
Yep.
You know, we always go back to that. And I think one of the coolest things is just every time Nintendo makes new hardware, it's unique in its own right, but then in the future, they apply it in ways that you wouldn't have even expected. Even mm-hmm. with like the 3DS as an educational thing in museums, like just things that you'd like wouldn't think of.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. So after Labo, getting ready, gearing up for E3, I would say, we looked at a couple more re-releases coming out in May, the first of which, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. We gave that a 9.0. Seth did a re-review for the Switch version of that, and he says, Donkey Kong's Tropical Freeze edition of Funky Mode makes it more accessible without reducing the formidable platforming difficulty to a walk in the park. There's still a lot of challenge, and even with the extra help, Donkey's Funky Uncle affords, but the Switch version manages to take just enough of an edge off of a punishing game and let the platforming outshine its difficulty. So there is something that I wanted to say about Donkey Kong's Country's Tropical Freezes.
Is that it's too difficult for you and it made you cry.
Well, there's that, but twice a year we update our top 25 list
mm-hmm.
and for Nintendo Switch. And this year we omitted or pushed Tropical Freeze off the list
to number 26
and added something, you know, a number of games onto the list, and the amount of people in the YouTube and IGN comments that were like, I can't believe Tropical Freeze isn't on this list, made me go back and revisit it. And we made a mistake. That game should absolutely be on this list because
this
is one of the most punishing but most rewarding and funniest and like most endearing platformers that I played in a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And having not finished it before and having an opportunity to go back and do it again this year, such an awesome game.
That's
and I
great.
Don't know how much time you all have spent with
a lot,
it, but
yeah.
like
I played
yeah.
the original.
Yeah.
And then didn't get into it much for the re-release.
Mm-hmm. Man, yeah. this game rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's good.
It's such a perfect example of a game that people might have missed out on mm-hmm. on Wii U, but now have an opportunity to play mm-hmm. this like stellar platformer from a very, very talented team on a 2018 console.
So. Yeah. I'm kind of okay with it just missing our top 25. I can completely see the argument for why it's there, though. It's an incredibly high quality game. For me, the platforming physics of it, I'm somebody who has 100% of the first three Donkey Kong Country games. I just don't really like that sort of the motion to it all. Like there's a rolling kind of mechanic to the,
it's a momentum that like you have to learn to counter. Basically.
Yeah. And there's a lot of levels that sort of like are borderline auto run, these crumbling environments. And
yeah, it's great. It's so stressful.
They're
roller coasters. Yeah.
Yeah. They're roller coasters. And I think if that's what you're looking
sometimes
for in
literally,
a platformer.
Yeah.
Yep. Then that's great. But I prefer other platformers, but mm-hmm. it's a good game.
Mm-hmm. Coming out just after that, it was Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition, 7.5 by Casey DeFreitas. She says, Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition is a good quality port of the Wii U game, but outside of much more stable performance and better local co-op, it doesn't add enough new content to make replaying the story mode interesting again. Stop that. Per's making fun of me. You guys can't see it. But Per, you're more of a, is this a MUA game? MUA?
What?
Musou?
Oh, Musou. Dynasty Warriors. Yes.
Musou. Yeah.
So, I'm not a Musou guy.
But you loved Fire Emblem Warriors.
Yeah, but I thought this was going to suck. And the Musou games, I have an issue with the repetitiveness of fighting hordes and hordes of enemies. And like, it's fun at first because they go flying through the air.
Yeah, but
you love
Zelda.
It's like, it feels like this. Yeah, but in Zelda, the fighting is a little bit more tactical.
Yeah.
Like, it feels different. Like, it feels like your sword is hitting something and there's impact.
Yeah, there's
not
a weight to the Musou games. It feels just kind
of. Musou is like Sauron in Lord of the Rings just going,
right.
Burr,
exactly.
Just like plowing through people. And that does get old, but I like this game. I enjoyed this game. Fire Emblem is the better Warriors game, but
did you get a chance to play
nostalgia
Hyrule Warriors?
I played a little. It was one of those things where it just kind of wears its welcome real quick.
Yes. Yeah,
and could get my fill in a couple hours and I'm done. I mean, it's neat seeing the Zelda characters there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not a Musou guy either.
There's some cool like Switch bonuses for those that didn't play the original edition. You know, there's like, I think additional characters and things like that.
I think it's a good game. We gave it a 7.5. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly right. And like, depending on how big of a Zelda fan you are, you're motivated to play more and unlock these characters because there's a lot of cool stuff in it. It's just, I brought this up before. It always feels a little bit like an imposter. Like it sounds like Zelda. It looks a little bit like Zelda, but it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep.
And then coming up next in May was one of my personal favorite games of the year, Yoku's Island Express. What a weird game. So we gave this game an 8.0. And I just want to read Tom's description because this is such a perfect example of what this is. So Yoku's Island Express is a novel Metroidvania pinball hybrid. A novel Metroidvania pinball hybrid that stands out as something wholly unique. It blends those clashing genres with a beautiful island style and is satisfying flippers and bumpers make uncovering its wide island a ton of fun. Yes, this is a Metroidvania where you play as a pinball. And you're bouncing off of bumpers and you're like doing loop de loops and getting power ups as a ball. Like, this game is freaking weird.
Yeah.
But
and
I love it.
Pretty and it sounds good. Like, it's just
great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Really funny.
And it's just a really charming experience. The one thing I wish this game had were more warp points.
Yeah.
Like,
me too.
When you're on the left side of this map, it is a Metroidvania. You gotta slog all the way to the right and like, you have to do skill shots with the bumpers to
every
get
time.
There,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that can be a little draining, but overall it's a game I think every Switch owner should play because there's nothing like it, really.
Yeah.
There's no adventure pinball game like this.
It's very strange.
Samus, like, if you remember that, but like, this feels different.
Mm-hmm. Did either of you get an opportunity to play much?
Yeah, I played a lot. I think you guys covered it. I find that like traversal in this game can be kind of cumbersome, which is sort of holds me back from wanting to explore it more because after your 15th time attempting the same shot to get into one area to keep moving, I just put the controller down.
I agree. I think Pear's right that if there were additional warp points, this game would be a 9.0.
Like, yeah, totally,
would be,
totally agree.
And you unlock ways different to get around faster, but it takes a while to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This game will forever stress me out, when I hear the music, behind it because I played this game a lot during E3.
Oh.
So we would finish our live show and I'd go back to the hotel and play a couple hours of Yoku's Island Express before it was time to go out. And now every time I hear that music, I think I'm late for something or that we're missing some assets, but, a fantastic game. Speaking of E3, either just before or just after, we got a look at these two games, and that is the first one, Mario Tennis Aces.
Yep.
We gave it a 7.5. Our reviewer said, despite some single-player shortcomings, Mario Tennis Aces is still a lot of frantic tennis fun with friends. It's a lot of Fs in there, which whatever.
It's
I don't
a fantastic faulty player game.
Yeah, I was not into Mario Tennis Aces.
I like it.
I tried to be into it. I like, you know, the first week or so that it was out, I played a lot of it.
Did you play with friends or just single player?
No, I played it with friends.
Okay.
Yeah, I played online a lot too, and
I feel like this game has a hard time, you know, justifying its existence in a year where you have Smash and Mario Party.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Those are such great multiplayer games, both of them. And so this one felt like the appetizer for it, but I think it's really well made. It's a good game.
No, those of you that are big fans of the show, will know Tina Amini, our editor in chief of games.
It's her game of the year.
That's right. Her number one pick, game of the year, Mario Tennis Aces.
All right.
I also think it's telling, when we see a lot of Wii U ports that we didn't see Ultra Smash ported. They ended up releasing.
Oh, because that game was very bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And instead they ended up just making a new one.
Yeah.
That's good.
I think the biggest disappointment for me about Tennis Aces is that it was Camelot developed and had this like sort of RPG single player mode that was not great. We were expecting it to be, or at least I was expecting it to be more like Mario Golf on the GBA.
Yeah.
Cause that had like a full blown RPG mode in it that was for the story mode that was so cool. But yeah, this one was like, meh.
It never got that good again. I'm hoping that they take a little bit more care with the single player.
Yeah.
And like, you know, brought up Golf Story. Golf Story has a more charming take on, you know, like the kind of sports RPG. And I would love to see them go in that direction again.
Yeah. That'd be really cool too. Brian, thoughts on Mario Tennis Aces?
I think my thoughts are that we are now in June in the list, and I'm not madly in love with a single first party offering that Nintendo had so far.
That's fair.
It's a lot of re-releases.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, if you were to mine the Wii U library, I think even then, like some of the ones they chose aren't the ones that I you know, like if you were like,
where's
hey, do you
3D
want
3D World? Or,
yeah. Where's 3D World? Where's Wind Waker? I mean, I know we're getting, new Super Mario Brothers U in just a couple of weeks now. So things will look up, but
well, luckily, that same month, they released the Splatoon 2 Octo expansion.
That's right. Yeah. So you got to talk to this one because I fell off of Splatoon 2 pretty hard after 2017, but you played a lot of the Octo expansion.
It was more of the, you know, kind of charming single player, gameplay, we got with the game, with both the first and the second game, which, you know, like the original multiplayer mode made you basically kind of like play through all the weapons, and like the highlights were always these ridiculous boss fights. And this one took it to the next level. It was a very surprising DLC pack to arrive for Splatoon. I didn't think they would go back to single player, and this came out of nowhere at this charming story with Octolings and everything. It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the single player mode in Splatoon 2. I thought it was this really cool, like Mario Sunshine successor.
Little Mario Paint.
Yeah, a little bit of Mario Paint in there, yeah. So yeah, I've actually often thought about going back and playing this expansion.
It's a really good DLC pack. I kind of feel like it was overlooked a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it came out, in June.
Well, it was right there, came out, right around the time of E3 when it was only could possibly be overshadowed by our very first look at Smash Ultimate. E3 this year, Nintendo leveraged that opportunity to show us so much of Smash, following up on a top secret reveal that I don't think any of us saw coming. I think that both of these games were sort of a little overshadowed because here's a couple of like online multiplayer games that you're releasing in light of, well, we also have the online multiplayer game coming at the end of the year. So
it might
have
been a bit of a misstep. Yeah, play it over the Christmas break.
Yeah. Yep. Speaking of online multiplayer games, and I promise we won't talk about this for very long because our audience is so sick of hearing about it. But at E3, Epic pulled a surprise release of Fortnite on Nintendo Switch.
Right.
After months of radio silence and saying, like, no current plans, they finally dropped Fortnite onto the Switch. And the only thing that I really want to say about Fortnite, other than the fact that I really enjoyed playing it for those first couple of months that it was out, on Switch, it's on nearly half of all Switches. Mm-hmm. So
it's free.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That install base, top notch.
Does that mean you have to have multiplayer? Do you have to have a subscription? Well, now it obviously launched when Nintendo Online wasn't. You don't need to.
You don't need the voice chat app. Yeah.
That like, must have been the special deal with Epic.
They worked around the whole deal.
Fortnite is the only company that can work around Nintendo's, or Fortnite's Epic, the only game that can work around Nintendo's online service, pay to play, and also force Sony to open up the gates and let them play cross-platform. Mm-hmm. Like, only Fortnite has that power. So,
I love Fortnite. I really, really do.
Big game. People who react negatively, it's the same reaction you get with like Minecraft, right?
Where
games have been around for a long time, are very popular, and then kind of people are just sick of hearing them because they don't want to play them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, it's like if Nintendo made a shooter, you know, it's a very clever shooting concept, and
it's great.
It'll keep on doing well as long as they keep on cranking out these giant
updates.
Yeah,
they're incredibly smart at keeping the interest going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Every Fortnite.
Yeah. Speaking of shooters, right before the end of June, we also got, another Bethesda port, Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus.
Oh, Wolfenstein?
Wolfenstein. Yeah, we gave the original a 9.1. It released the year before. And, this particular version, is ranked, 79% on Metacritic.
That's a little blurry.
That very well could be. I'm not sure if this is a Switch version. This looks very good. Definitely that we're showing you. Oh, just kidding. Maybe. This is one of my favorite games of 2017. I've not had an opportunity to play it on the Switch.
Oh, really?
But yeah.
It's, I mean, it feels good. It feels like the same game. It's just, it uses dynamic scaling on the resolution. So it does get a little blurry, but honestly, when you're playing, play it on a small screen like this, it's a pretty looking game.
This is
really
actually
fun.
This was probably one of my most regretted purchases of, of 2018 on Nintendo Switch.
Wow.
Yeah. You already owned it though, right?
What's up?
You already owned the next gen.
And like it was regularly dirt cheap on the HD consoles, but this is a game I found like not unplayable, but just like sort of like perpetually ugly. It's blurry. The draw distance is really bad. I don't feel like the shooting mechanics work really well in handheld mode. On docked, it's fine, but in handheld mode, I think they asked the question like, can we pull this off?
Yeah.
And technically they did, but I urge you to play this game elsewhere if you have the opportunity to.
It doesn't look the same. That's
I said that much to a lot of the fan base's chagrin when it had come out originally, but this game, Doom, things like that, like, I'm gonna play him in 4K elsewhere.
You play this game. There are key moments in the story where the character like reads something off a paper or something like that, and they're unreadable on your handheld screen. And so I mean, play it elsewhere if you can. If you see it on sale, then sure, play it docked, but.
I think you're underselling it. Like, not everybody has the.
They're overselling it. It's $60.
No, that's okay. Not everybody has the other consoles that they can go to. I think the core game is really, really good.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this.
It does sound like.
It has lots of Germans in it, which is great. They're not good Germans.
It's like watching.
Oh, you're talking about the bad Germans?
Yes.
It's like watching like a really big blockbuster Hollywood movie, like on an airplane screen.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So
no,
that's the only opportunity to see Infinity War or Dunkirk or whatever. Then do it up.
No, don't watch Dunkirk.
The big two.
You gotta get that audio.
Infinity War and Dunkirk.
Together at last.
Moving into July. So July saw the release of Octopath Traveler, which was a long, long awaited Nintendo Switch game. We first saw Octopath Traveler, in the very first Nintendo Switch tease before it even had a name. And we gave that game a 9.3. Octopath Traveler's, this is Seth Macy, our reviewer. Octopath Traveler's beautiful style and outstanding take on traditional turn-based combat make it a game that pushes JRPGs forward rather than simply playing homage to the, and then I just stopped. I didn't finish the rest of that sentence.
Apparently. To the Captain Toad's treasure tracker.
I didn't, right. Apparently I forgot to copy the end of that. But anyway, Seth thought this game was very good. I wanted to really love this game and sort of fell off of it early, and I have it in the back of my mind that I should go back and finish it because
I'm in the same boat.
I love Bravely Default. Like, I think it's one of the best JRPGs in the last decade. I'm a big JRPG guy, but there's something about this game that just didn't hook me right away.
It's a JRPG. It takes a commitment, right? Like, you have to level characters and in this game, multiple ones. And
I would be fascinated to see the completion stats on this game because I know so many people, including me, who bought it and jumped in and adored it and really loved the art style and the aesthetic and the gameplay and then just left. Yeah. And I don't know what happened, if we all moved on to other games or if it just lost us.
I think it's one of those things where the conversation afterwards was all the characters' individual stories are really great, right? Mm-hmm. But there's no unifying sort of overarching thing that really brings them all together. So once you assemble this team and you have all of these sort of characters that aren't really communicating with each other, there's not really that sort of great overall plot that pushes you
forward. Yeah, that seemed to be the general consensus as well, was that like it does all these individual stories pretty well, but weaving them together in a bigger narrative is too challenging and just doesn't really
come across.
Fair. Yeah.
Yeah, I still really enjoyed this game. I felt like, you know, I love the idea of the game more than the actual game too. Like, I agree with you guys. It was just such a wonderful surprise to see a game that with an art style that you hadn't seen before.
Yeah, it's really like
romantic. I hope we see more
or something, but like extruded in this weird kind of like pop-up paper look. I really dug that. But once you start playing, you're like, oh yeah, this feels like every JRPG I've played as a kid, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's something to be said about like the nostalgia factor there as well.
Yep.
But speaking of nostalgia factor, another big July release. One of my favorite releases this year on Nintendo Switch, even though it was a re-release, and that's Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker. Mm-hmm. What a cute little guy, you know?
He gets out there, finds
all the puzzle pieces.
He should learn how to jump, though. I feel like it's time.
That would change everything.
Yeah.
No, exactly. He can just jump out of the levels.
Now, this game came for Switch and 3DS this year. We gave it this particular version an 8.7. Joey Scrubs over in the UK says, Treasure Tracker still feels close close to unique and gains new life on both of Nintendo's current systems. Switch is very much the better choice, but 3DS is by no means a bad option. Still smart, prettier than ever, and in retrospect, genuinely important as part of Nintendo's modern history.
I will argue that the Wii U is still the best place to play this game.
Because of the screen?
The dual screen mechanic really lends itself well to this game. It gives you a lot more screen real estate and control options. Switch is still a fantastic place to play it if you haven't. But
yeah. It's also an interesting case because I feel like the playing this undocked is also the way to play it because of some of the touchscreen stuff that needs to happen. Because playing it docked and trying to aim with your pro controller is a little cumbersome.
Oh,
but
yeah, that's right.
But by the way, a fantastic port of a really, really great sort of overlooked Nintendo game.
And there's a bunch of Odyssey content in there too.
Yep, for sure. Probably the prettiest looking 3DS game. You played it on the 3DS, they did a really nice job bringing that to the tiny screen.
I love the aesthetic of this game too, just that storybook feel and flipping through the pages and that stupid bird that keeps kidnapping you and your friends.
That bird's a jerk.
He's a real jerk.
Yeah. And it's charming when you finish the first main quest and it turns the page. You're like, there's more.
Or the little pixel toads
so
hidden
good.
Everywhere. Oh, it's such so a goddamn adorable game.
Good game. Almost cursed.
If you missed it, play it.
Okay, so moving into August, we got another indie darling. Actually, a couple of them. So starting with Dead Cells, we reviewed this. We gave it a 9.5. Nothing else to say about that review.
We loved it so much, we reviewed it twice.
Brandon Tyrell says, Dead Cells is rewarding in its flexibility in a few games, in a way few games are. Easily digestible in each run through, its beautifully detailed and shifting levels instill a feeling of discovery and familiarity. I love.
Oh my God.
Dead Cells. Holy moly, did I play the hell out of Dead Cells this year.
And Switch was such a phenomenal place to play it because you could just pick up and
it's almost
a do
definitive
a
version for me.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I played it on Switch and I played it on PlayStation and I much preferred the Switch version.
There was
of this game.
The very rare, very like occasional frame hiccup where
they've since patched.
But this game in handheld mode, just doing runs while like something on was in the background that you would even pretend to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Getting your ass kicked and screaming and throwing your Switch down and picking up and trying it again. I love this game so much.
So difficult and so rewarding. And for a guy that has gone on the record many times on NVC to talk about how much I dislike procedurally generated levels, something about this game, the race to get to that closing door or the option to either, okay, this time I want to do a run where I level up a bunch of my stats and then go to the next area. Or do I just want to like plow through and get to the second area fast? Or do I want to run straight to the boss? Like all these different.
I think it's because the way it handles procedurally generated stuff is it has these goalposts that are always almost around the same areas. Mm-hmm. And then within all that, there's kind of the language that it always speaks. Mm-hmm. And so you will always find the same kind of things just in a different pattern, which instead of being frustrated by bad level design sort of urges you to keep playing because it feels new every single time.
Yeah. To me, it felt like playing something wholly unique and so retro at the same time. I think it's sort of looking at the future of what Metroidvania games could be. Like, I really can't say enough about how great Dead Cells is.
Yeah, give this team Metroid.
I hope not. The roguelike or roguelite aspects are ultimately always the parts that I don't like. I love a well-designed Metroid game where I only play the game once, but I get to explore everything and it's always in the same spot. I like that style of gameplay better, but this game was one of those rare titles where I did really enjoy it and I wasn't that bothered by the remix stuff, but I would love to see this developer, tackle like a traditional kind of Metroid setups quest game.
Alex, oh my God, plans to
so good.
I didn't play Dead Cells because I don't like procedurally generated stuff. But hearing all of this and how this is like turned so many people around, it's like I have to give it a try.
I won't say that it turned me around. I'm still not a fan of procedurally generated levels, but this game does it unlike any other procedurally generated game that I think I've played before. Speaking of great level design. Or maybe not. I feel like I like this next game more so than a lot of people here in the office.
I really like it too.
Yeah, but we're talking about The Messenger, and what a cool throwback. You know, obviously like a love letter to Ninja Gaiden. Has a really awesome, two really awesome retro styles because the hook is that you can switch back and forth between an 8-bit and a 16-bit platformer. really difficult but super cool boss fights. We ended up giving this game an 8.0, which I probably would have rated it maybe 0.5 higher.
Mm-hmm.
But Mitchell reviewed it, and he said, when you're fully geared up and the messenger is hitting you with brand new stages and challenges that you haven't seen before, the messenger is an amazing must-play experience.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think that it suffers from the same problem that Yoku did a little bit, in that the backtracking is a little bit intense and the warp system isn't as great as it could have been.
It's a little long in the tooth too. I think this game is
also super funny.
Yeah. It's really funny. I think this game is like this year's Shovel Knight. It does for Ninja Gaiden what Shovel Knight did for like, I don't know, DuckTales or Mega Man 2 or that whole mix of games. It was really awesome to, I interviewed the devs on Up at Noon this year, and it's just a small, very passionate team. And then to see them like on, you know, for the Game Awards winning and stuff like that, it's just really cool. I like this game so much, and the fact that in August we went from Dead Cells to The Messenger was like honestly one of my favorite months for indies on Switch.
Yeah. And I, in the same way that I will associate, oh God, what was it? Yoku with E3. I'll always think of Cologne with The Messenger, because we were playing, all of us were playing this game during Gamescom. Well, you didn't make it this year, but yeah, we were all talking about how much we loved The Messenger during Gamescom. So that was really cool.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, moving on. September. Now, one thing that we probably should talk about, but I don't know that we're like perfectly well equipped, and that's Xenoblade 2, the Torna expansion.
Alex played it, right?
Did you?
No, I wish. Yeah.
I was really hoping that we brought you on and you were going to be like, yeah, I love Xenoblade.
Xenoblade, like, really, it's so interesting from like an aesthetic perspective and story perspective, but the super complicated battle mechanics and it's too much for me, all the menus, and I can't do it.
Well, they do a good job, like, onboarding, though. Give it a shot.
And supposedly this expansion is like a whole game in and of itself.
It's a prequel, right?
Yeah, it offers a lot of stuff for Xenoblade fans.
It's a standalone. So I played some of it. I didn't get that far. I'm hoping maybe over the break I can play a little bit more. But it is a standalone experience. You can play it if you haven't played the other one, but it fleshes out characters that you know from the main quest.
I would kill for like a Babby mode for this game, just to make it. Make the battle platforms like beat 'em up style, and just let me run through and see the story.
Turn it into an anime and I'll watch it.
Yep.
Try it. You might like it.
Okay. And then obviously the big news coming out of September was Nintendo Switch launching Nintendo Switch Online, which I still have pretty mixed feelings about. It took me a long time to even cop to the idea of paying $20 for the service itself for the year. I ultimately think it's fine. I mean, it offers some cool things, but
you know what?
Ultimately, it's
not fine though, because the online service is not fine, as evidenced by Smash Bros.
Well, there's
right
that,
now.
Yeah.
But I do love the don't call it a virtual console thing. I love the idea of getting three new games every month, and like for this expanding collection that's accessible when you need it. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good deal for $20 too.
It was kind of bad news that they sugarcoated in a couple of things that helped it make it a little easier to swallow. Like cloud saves being there for the first time.
Cloud saves is a good thing.
To be fair, should have been there from the jump, but they're here now. And also getting some new NES games every month, which is really cool.
And I don't mind paying for like those features like cloud saves.
Yes.
Obviously NES games is nice.
Yeah. I really like the app that runs the NES games. I wish you could button map. I wish you could get rid of that font at the bottom and all that kind of stuff. Little things like that. But it's here and it's $20.
We said it a bunch during September when we were originally talking about this, but you get what you pay for.
What we were worried about, the thing we were worried about having to use an app to communicate with your friends, is exactly the Achilles heel of this service. Like, it really doesn't make sense. You play Fortnite with without any of this stuff and it works just fine.
Yep.
You just gotta ask, like, how long until they integrate voice chat into the games properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And wasn't the online service supposed to come out launch year? And then it got delayed.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think even just that delay raised people's maybe expectations a bit
too. Of course. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But we got to play stuff for free for a couple of months.
Yeah. 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 Who doesn't love Solomon's Key?
Almost said ship.
We're going to blow through these next three games. We are running a little short on time here. I got to tighten up. But
we talked about them recently at
Super
length,
Mario Party. This is October, obviously. Super Mario Party, we gave it a 7.3. I really loved Mario Party. I thought this was sort of I hate to say it, but a return to form. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that's cliche, but I played a lot of Super Mario Party.
This is my favorite in over a decade.
Yeah.
In the Mario Party.
For sure,
Party
yeah.
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 Dark Souls Remastered. I was too impatient to wait for the Switch version. I played Dark Souls again on the PlayStation, but you played it quite a bit on Switch.
I did the same thing that you did, and then I just did it again on Switch.
Brian loves Dark Souls.
I do.
You like Dark Souls?
I don't.
Oh boy.
Too hard for me.
All right. Here we go. Aww. And then lastly, in October, a game that, I swear to God, if Smash hadn't come out, this probably would have been my Switch game of the year.
Yeah.
And that's, Diablo III, the Eternal Collection.
Yep.
What a banger of a game.
Oh my God. I love this game.
Yeah. We gave it a 9.0. Totally deserving. There's so much content and it is such a blast to play.
And
be it with a pal or a solo, like, it's awesome.
It's great on this platform too.
Yeah.
And it's just, everything is smooth. Like it works dropping in and out. Everything works as it should. You never think about the game systems or the menus or anything. It's just like you can just do stuff in this game. It's so well designed.
Yeah. I got these big metal wings. They look cool, man.
Yeah, right? You carry a flag with you everywhere.
So now we're getting into more recent territory, stuff that we've talked about more recently on the show here. So, Alex, you weren't around. You have not yet been on the show, but we talked at length about Pokemon Let's Go. We gave the game an 8.3 for great point three. Mm-hmm. What do you think of Pokemon Let's Go as a Pokemon boy?
I think it's a great game.
Okay.
Enough
said.
Great point three.
Great point three. It is very much a remake of Yellow, and that's exactly what I wanted. Being able to just revisit Kanto and just go through all the gyms and see everything with new visuals. Great. I was a little worried with the Go integration that it was going to feel kind of like sort of like a commercial for, you know, people pushing people to the app or whatever, or just bringing people to the Switch for whatever. But it really did feel like a true remake.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see them do this again with Gen 2, Gen 3. And even some of the stuff they introduced with like seeing Pokemon in the overworld. I'd love to see them carry some of these things over to the next gen. Mm-hmm. Pleasantly surprised.
And Brian, you've not traditionally been a Pokemon boy, but now you got into it.
The first one I connected with ever. And I love it. And I know a lot of hardcore fans are just like, oh, you know, these idiot casuals are here ruining this franchise for us. Yeah, we are. Get used to it too, because we're gonna wreck everything you love. No, I think this game had some issues with controls. Like, I'm still bummed that I couldn't play with a pro controller on a TV.
That's fair.
There's no reason.
It's just classic Nintendo being like, oh, I don't know. But playing in handheld mode was so much fun. I adore this game. It's just beautiful and wonderful, and just I really cherish it. It's such a good time.
Yeah,
nice.
And then of course in December we had the 2018 version of Breath of the Wild or Super Mario Odyssey in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. This is a game that people buy a Switch for.
Yeah.
We gave it a 9.4. We've spent the last 2 weeks talking ad nauseum about how much we love this game, but it can't be said enough. Smash Brothers is fantastic.
Yep.
If you're not playing it, if you're waiting for Christmas, like, totally fine. But man, this is the game to play this year for me. And, it's my number one pick for Switch game of the year.
You'll be playing World of Light for the next 14
years. Oh, yeah.
I'm still
working through the, classic mode to unlock characters.
Yeah. Zach, you and I were both on the show in the past sort of being like, oh, I'm really excited for you guys for this game. You know, it's going to be cool. You know, but for us, like, you know, there's not really a lot to do as a single player guy. There is so much here to do. If you're playing from that perspective, if you're a multiplayer guy, there's tons to do here. It remains to be seen how much the sort of Melee community really gravitates to this one.
It'll go back to Melee.
Yeah.
Online being the wonky thing here that, you know, we talked about earlier, obviously, but God, there's so much here. And it's, you know, this is not really just, and they're talking about this now, but this is not just a love letter to Nintendo anymore. This is video games.
Yeah.
This is a celebration of this medium and the history behind it. And it's just weird and stupid and funny and just rock solid. I love this game.
So accessible and so fun and so goofy. Yeah. I can't recommend this game enough.
Yep.
Some other games that we didn't get a chance to talk about on this show, this year. On the 3DS, we had Kirby Battle Royale, Detective Pikachu, Dylan's Dead Heat, Breakers, Yo-Kai Watch Blasters, and then re-releases like Luigi's Mansion and WarioWare Gold, which I did spend a lot of time with WarioWare. It's very good. We also got, Pokemon Quest, Monster Hunter Generations. Sorry, Casey, for not mentioning that. The World Ends With You, Final Remix, Warframe, Civ 6, Mega Man 11, Valkyria Chronicles 4, and Dragalia Lost.
On mobile.
On mobile, yeah. So overall, if you take an average of these scores, we end up around approximately an 8.5, which on the IGN scale means that Nintendo Switch had a great year. I wanted to kind of go round robin here and talk to you guys about what you think you would give the game. Starting with you, Pear, give the Nintendo's year overall?
The year? I mean, it's kind of, I feel like it was too backloaded. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I would give it an 8 and above if the love had been spread out a little bit more. If we had gotten the Pokemon remake maybe in March or April.
Yeah.
But I felt like the big media experiences were all backloaded and the re-releases we got were all good, but they weren't my favorite. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, Wind Waker as a re-release on the GameCube was so, on the Wii U, which is so awesome. Yeah. And I wanted something of that caliber.
Wish
and so I'll give it a
7.9. 7.9, mm-hmm. almost great, yeah. but mostly good. I'm gonna go a little lower. I as much as I love Smash and as much as I love some of the re-releases, they're kind of in my sweet spot. I totally agree with you mm-hmm. that I think that it was too backloaded. I'm gonna give it a 7.2. I mm-hmm. think without the addition of Smash and without games like Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker, we would have been looking at like a 6.8 this year. For yeah. okay.
Really? Even with Smash? Smash is so good.
But with yeah. Smash, it yeah. elevates that number quite a bit for me yeah. because it is so good. It is the kind of thing that you expect from a first party Nintendo game. So I'm going to say 7.2. Brian? Yeah.
I'm actually right around where you are, Zach. Okay. I came in here thinking I would give it a 9 out of 10 for just the year of Nintendo, mm-hmm. their third parties. Obviously I haven't really calculated in all the indies I played on Switch this year because there's just so many.
So many. Yep. Yeah.
And realistically, I believe that they, for me personally, did most of the heavy lifting this year, especially through the first 6-7 months where we're kind of, it's a lot of like pretty goods.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with a 7. Smash and Pokemon at the end really brought things up. And there's a bunch of great games that kind of sprinkled out throughout the year. A lot mm-hmm. of, you know, Dead Cells, Messenger and stuff like that. But, I'm really excited to see what they do next year because we're starting with new Super Mario Brothers.
Yep.
We're going to get Animal Crossing.
Wait, Yoshi?
Maybe Metroid. Yep. Maybe, yep. Who knows?
So. I feel like the scores are fair. Because if you compare to the PlayStation, right, where in the same year we got a God of War, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, yeah. and a Red Dead Redemption,
Spider-Man.
Right?
Like,
and
Spider-Man.
And then Spider-Man on top of that. Like, you got some amazing, like, 9 to 10 rating games. And don't sleep on Assassin's Creed. It's really,
yeah.
really good.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed. Right.
And, like, compared to that, this is a little bit – it's all backloaded, and we don't have that same kind of variety. Like, in year one where we had Odyssey and Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, I would have given them, like, a 9.5.
Yeah, I said it – I'm sorry, Alex. We yeah. – haven't let you say your piece.
Yeah, so 7.5.
Yeah.
Echoing pretty much everything you guys have said, backloaded. Smash is really the big one, yeah. right? And yep. Pokemon is kind of like a stopgap for next year's. This year just feels a little bit like sort of like a weird in-between year yeah. stopgap because next year's loaded. We have like so many titles.
We've talked about that a lot on this show about how Nintendo might have like A and B years, mm-hmm. right? Where one year will be amazing and have all these like big releases yeah. and then the next year might be a little less, you know, a little lighter. I said this on Scoop this week. Actually, if you're not a Game Scoop fan and haven't heard it yet, Damon did a really cool episode where he brought myself, Ryan McCaffrey, and Jonathan Dornbush on, the three podcast leads, to talk about their respective mm-hmm. years. We sort of unanimously voted that the PS4 kind of won this year, which mm-hmm. is, I don't think anybody's going to argue against yeah. that, but, one of the things that I said there was that I wish that they would have held Mario Odyssey for like a February release this uh-huh. year and made that second year, yeah. you know, bolstered right. the first quarter of the
season. I sure liked it in the first year.
Yeah, me but, too. It was really
but
good.
But the Switch was, this year was very much kind of like a love letter to families for me. Like they have so many good multiplayer games with, you know, including Mario Tennis and Mario Party and Smash and, you know,
and
you've
Kirby,
got Pokemon and, yeah. and Kirby. And then you had Labo. Like I felt like Nintendo was the most family friendly console, whereas like in the launch year, it was all about hardcore gamers.
Yeah.
Like all these like beloved franchises returning in a big way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really is. It's an incredible, like the way they've been able to sort of float this year.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of concern even going into this year. What are they going to have?
Sure.
I mean, we even got Mario Kart last year too. It's like yeah. they're three yeah. like right, biggest yeah. ones.
Mm-hmm.
And arms. Yeah.
And stop it.
Yeah.
Waiting
stop
for legs
that.
Next year. Yeah.
Or butts.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So, a lot of stuff to look forward to next year. Obviously, we've got a ton of big games coming down the pipeline next year for the Nintendo Switch, and a couple that we think might show up remains to be seen. But we'll obviously be here.
Right.
We'll obviously be here talking you through it all year. But on that note, I did want to do a little bit of housekeeping before we sign off for the year. Next week, no episode. time for Christmas, so we'll all be enjoying time with our families and opening presents.
You going home or you sticking around?
I'm gonna go home for a few days. Brian, you'll probably stick around.
I'm sticking around.
That's San Diego, right?
Yeah. No. I'm from the Central Valley. Watch it. Alex, you going to be around?
I'm hanging here.
Okay. Yeah. Right on.
Same.
And Perry, you're here as well. So, but I also wanted to point out, next year, I will say it's been a tremendous honor for me to host Nintendo Voice Chat as a longtime IGN and Nintendo fan. Sort of surreal for me to get in the hot seat, week after week. But it's also a tremendous responsibility. And, starting next year, you're going to see sort of a rotating cast of hosts, be that Pear, Brian, Casey will probably sub in here.
That's why
and
we're
there.
Subbing him out.
Yeah, I can't control the microphone. But yeah, I just want to let you guys know, one of the four of us will probably be in that hot seat every week. So don't be alarmed if I'm not right here, because I'll probably be right over there.
Mm-hmm. It'll be Picross for 60 minutes, ladies and gentlemen.
The Picross retrospective or Pear Schneider.
Or Brian's Indie Hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I look forward
we're
to
screwed.
I look
it's
forward
over.
To both
what?
Of those shows.
People love the Indie Hour.
Indie Hour is actually not a bad name. Guys, thank you so much for watching Nintendo Voice Chat. That's IGN's Nintendo show every Thursday at 3 p.m. right here on IGN.com and Fridays at 3 p.m. on YouTube. Thank you, Pear. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Alex. What a great year we've had. And guys, tune in next year. Don't forget, this is the only place where you can...
Get the thing.
Get the thing.
Get the thing.
Get the thing.
Hope you get many things for Christmas. Get lots of things
get
for Christmas.
Get lots of things for Christmas.
Get
or whatever your holiday is. Get the thing.
Yeah.
Get all the things.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new. Or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.